Look at that right there. Now, if that's not the some of the biggest elephant garlic cloves you've ever seen. That's huge.
I guarantee you we got the best elephant garlic out there. It's a beautiful crop this time. It did really well, and we're excited to have this big old pretty elephant garlic. We don't get this every year, so it's nice to have the big cloves that everybody wants.
Yeah, and I can tell you from personal experience, the size of the clove you plant does make a decent bit of difference on how big the end product's going to be. Because when I save my own seed, the bigger ones I planted always did better than the little peony ones I planted. So let's say hey to everybody, and we'll get into more a little bit about this stuff. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we got a really good show planned for you tonight. We're going to be talking about elephant garlic, shallots, when to plant them, how to plant them, how much water, how much fertilizer, all that good stuff. But before we get into that, we always have a little show and tell. And speaking of alliums, we got some onion transplants in the greenhouse that are looking good. I got to get out there and plant some more. We got some Texas Legend seed in. I just haven't got it on the website yet. I need to get that up soon. Because I know a lot of people out there want to grow some of those Texas Legend starts for themselves.
So I'm going to do something I've never done before. I got a spot out there that I have been, I got plastic over, I got an onion bed. So I'm going to plant onion seeds in an onion bed for onion transplants. And I need to get that done within the next week or so too. I think I'm going to plant the Savannah Sweets.
Savannah Sweets, good choice. Good choice. A lot of our transplants have started in the greenhouse, have started putting on true leaves. We probably need to, we'll start hitting them with a little fertilizer, a little 20-20-20 through the brass siphon mixer pretty soon.
Maybe I've already done that. Maybe I jumped the gun a little bit.
Hey, go for it. And as far as that, a lot of people ask, how often should you fertilize them once they start putting on the true leaves? You could, we've talked about this before, we do it at least once or twice a week. But if you put your rate low on your fertilizer, you could probably, with that brass siphon mixer, because it's kicking it down 16 to 1, you could probably just fertilize it every time you water.
Actually, that's what I'm doing right
okay.
now. So I'm at a weak dilution, and I'm just what we call spoon feeding. Every time I water, there's a little bit of fertilizer in there.
Yeah.
We was out of town, and we come back, and I noticed some of the things was hungry. They didn't get fed like they should have,
right.
So I kind of had to mix me a mix up and get something going on. They were starving.
Starving. We'll get them back going. As far as my garden goes, I got cucumbers looking jam up. All that, man, it has been dry. Mm-hmm. We ain't had a good rain in a month and nothing in sight soon. But I've been keeping the water to them. I got cucumbers about halfway up the Hortonova trellis netting. But what's strange is, so right beside that trellis line, I got another trellis line where I planted my Kentucky Wonder pole beans, and they are looking pitiful. When I planted them, when I did, usually by now we've got a little cooler temps coming in, and it's just still been hot, and I got rust all over them, and I just...
You shotgun a little, you probably should have waited a little bit longer to plant them.
Yeah, but in past years, you never know when it's going to hit. But yeah, I'm probably going to have to replant me some somewhere else.
Yeah.
They just, the heat got on them, and I've got rust all over the leaves.
It's a rough time of year to be gardening. It is the roughest part of the year for me for gardening. I tell you something else, the insect pressure that is at its peak right now. I've noticed whiteflies are pretty bad. It's just a tough, tough time. I was out in my garden yesterday, and that white flies is out there. Whew, they're out there in droves. Cotton's been defoliated in our area here. So we're at our peak for insect population right now for the year.
Yeah, and I'm itching to plant me some English peas, but I know it's still a little too early for those, too.
A
couple things I want to mention as far as, so last week's show, we talked about the whole no-till thing, and we had a lot of people suggest channels that are doing it successfully out there, and a lot of them suggested this. There's a guy in the UK named Charles Dowding, and he's got a really nice YouTube channel. I've seen his stuff before, and he does a little no-till market garden. One thing to note there, yes, he does the no-till, works great for him. He's on a slightly smaller scale than what we do, and he's in a completely different climate than what we are. I always tell people, people don't realize how far north England is. They think England's kind of right in line with New York City, but it's way on up there. So get you a map and draw you a straight line from the UK over, and you'll see it's in Canada. So completely different world almost as far as weed pressure and insect pressure that they're dealing with. But, you know, kudos to them for making it work. And if you can make it work, go for it. What else? So, sad week. Our 2 minute tips. I'm putting an end. I know everybody, nobody wants to hear this. I'm putting an end to the 2 minute tips. There hasn't been one in a couple weeks, and I've been kind of having this mental battle with whether to continue that or to switch to a different format or not. And I finally decided the 2 minute tips. It was a good run. It was a good run. A little over a year and a half we had, and a lot of good videos out there, and they'll still be there on YouTube. You can go check them out. But the YouTube algorithm nowadays tends to favor more longer form videos. And so we'll still do a video on Tuesdays. It just won't be a 2 minute tip. It'll be a longer video, and we have to kind of do what works on YouTube to get more people to see our videos. So that was kind of the decision I made there. Yep. And then lastly, the last thing I want to mention before we get into shallots and garlic. So we recently went to a seed meeting in Cleveland and met with a lot of big seed producers out there where we get our seeds from. And one thing I wanted to kind of get some engagement from our audience here on is the treated versus the untreated seed. Now, we don't carry any seed that is treated with anything that gets inside the plant.
Systemic, anything that is systemic.
Right. Now, some of our hybrid seeds currently are treated with something called thyrum, which is a very, very mild fungicide. And it really does. I've did some side-by-side tests of jambalaya okra with thyrum and without it. It does a lot better with the thyrum on it. With that being said, a lot of people are opposed to anything being on the seed, regardless if they know what it is or not.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but thyrum helps a lot with dampening off.
It does.
So when you get that little plant that first comes up and it gets that rot down there where it's soil line and they rot off, this thyrum helps a lot with that and keeps that from happening.
Right.
That's one of the biggest things you can, especially in a greenhouse situation, but also in the direct seeding, you can have some of that.
So, personally, I like the thyrum being on there, but we want to do what makes everybody happy. So, we've met with some of these bigger producers, and we can start getting almost everything, with exception of sweet corn. You kind of want to keep that treated, but everything else we can get untreated. Let us know in the comments, are you just completely opposed to treated seed, or are you okay with it? And kind of let us know where to go there, and we'll be glad to accommodate everybody. So
one more time on the treated thing, we're talking about contact fungicides. We're not talking about anything that's systemic, like the neonicotinoids or anything that we have a feeling about that we know is unsafe. So we feel decent with what we've carried and sold so far. We would like your feedback and see what you think.
Yeah, just based on the thyrum, would you like it or would you not like it? We can get it either way. So let us know on that. All right, now that that's out of the way, we're going to get into elephant garlic and shallots, which we just received a big shipment in. So we've got these on the site now. Three varieties of shallots, which we're going to talk about. And we've got these nice big elephant garlic bulbs. If you subscribe to our email newsletter, you probably already knew about it, but it's the first time we're talking about it on the show or on the videos. So we've been growing elephant garlic for years. We grew shallots last year. They did really well for us. Let's talk about the shallot varieties we got first, and then we'll get into planting them. So we have three different varieties here, and we'll go from that
one.
This
is the Ambition.
So we have, and they're different shapes. So we have the first one, which is a traditional kind of round shallot, and this one, the variety is called Ambition. And then the second one we have
is this one,
is what we call a semi-long shallot. So if you, it's still kind of rounded in the middle, but it's longer than this Ambition. So this semi-long one is called Monique. And then the last one we have is what they call a banana shallot, which is even more elongated. So you can see the semi-long is still kind of round in the middle. Banana is really elongated. And this one is called Roderick. So Ambition, Monique, and Roderick. You've got round, semi-long, and banana. We grew all three last year, and I really liked all three of them.
It's a good idea, and I'm probably do it again. About three rows, one of each variety.
Right, right.
So let's talk about shallots a little bit, and because a lot of people are not real familiar with them. A few years ago, I were not familiar with them. I've just got accustomed to growing them the last year or two. Actually, it's from France. The French use them in cooking a lot.
Uh-huh.
In the United States, they were not very popular in the 30s and the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
There's this lady called Julia Childs.
Yeah,
that right. Big cooking show back in the 50s.
On PBS,
and she was the queen. She was the Martha Stewart of today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she started using shallots a lot in her recipes because, you know, these are cooking onions.
Mm-hmm.
And it is classified as an onion.
Mm-hmm.
So she started using them a lot. But when she started using them a lot in her recipes and everything, there was no U.S. production of shallots. So that's kind of what spurred on people wanting to grow their own shallots, because there wasn't any, and you couldn't even buy them in stores or whatever back then. So it kind of revolutionized since then. A lot of your French cooking calls for shallots in their mm-hmm. recipes and stuff. So
okay.
I'll give you a little background there.
Thanks for that history lesson there. Did not know that.
Played you a little Julia Child.
Yeah. So shallots, you'll see some people online selling seeds. We sell what we call the set. So this is a set, which is a basically like an immature bulb. And each set has kind of two ends to it. You've got a root end to it, you can see there, where there were some roots that dried up. And then this is the stem end at the top right here.
Now a lot of people eat the green with the bulb down there.
Right.
You can call it green. And the best way to describe the flavor of a shallot is it's kind of between a garlic and an onion. So if you took a garlic and an onion and put them together, this is pretty much what you'd have. I don't see people eating them fresh. Now, I've seen a lot of recipes where people roast them with olive oil and things like that, and I'm sure they're delicious. I've not done that. But as far as dicing them up and using them in recipes with a green part and everything, I think it's a forte. And if you got a kitchen garden, I think you got to have these in your kitchen garden.
Right, right. So let's talk about planting shallots a little bit. So shallots, you want to plant them anywhere from, the average is about 6 inches apart. Now when you plant these things, and I can tell you from lesson last year, don't just make you a furrow and throw them down there. You've got to orient this shallot bulb a certain way for them to really do good. So you can take you a hoe, or you can take our wheel hoe with the plow set and make you a nice little planting trench for them. When you go to sit them in there 6 inches apart, you want to make sure you put that root end down and put this stem end facing up. And I noticed last year that it even works better if you don't cover it completely. Leave just maybe the first centimeter or so of this top stem end uncovered, because that's where your green is going to start to grow from. Leave that uncovered, and it will do pretty good that way.
You know, I think a hoe handle, just if you had it marked off, you go down there, if your soil is nice and loose, go down there with a hoe handle, stab you a hole in there, and you could drop them right in there. It'd be perfect.
Yeah, if you had your soil nice and tilled
nice
up,
and tilled
a hoe
up.
Handle, you still got to, because I tried to drop them there with a pipe last year, you still got to get down there and make sure they're right side up.
Yeah.
So I've seen folks cover them completely. I covered mine completely last year, but I had some that I didn't on accident, and the ones I didn't cover completely seemed to do better. So I would recommend not covering them completely. So those are our shallots, and we have those in 1 pound, 5 pound, and 10 pound for each of the three varieties. So your 1 pound looks like this right here.
Yep. And I should have done a count. I don't know how many on average is in there, but these
are about 100, I think.
It's about 100 in a pound. So if you order a pound, you get it in a nice little bag, cotton muslin bag like that right there. And we got the variety there on the top there.
So a 1 pound bag with 100 sets there, if you got them spaced 6 inches apart, that's going to be enough for a 50-foot row. Or if you've got several raised beds, I would plant a whole raised bed of them. So the 1 pound bag is going to do you good. We also have them in, let's see if I can reach down here,
five
pound, which would be about 500. And then if you really want to grow some shallots, we got them in a 10-pound bag as well. So you can get what you need. Like Greg mentioned earlier, I would suggest trying a little bit of each. You can see which ones you like better.
Yeah, a row of each.
A row of each. Before we get into kind of when to plant and fertilize them, because it's going to be pretty much the same with shallots and elephant garlic, let's talk about the elephant garlic a little bit. So
that's what the bulbs look like, man. You tear these apart.
So when you harvest them, that's what you're going to get.
But then you tear them apart and you use these individual cloves, just like we watch you plant.
To plant, right.
Now, the way we use these in cooking is we use them in a little garlic press, just like you would garlic. As you probably know, elephant garlic is not a true garlic. It's in the leek family. But it is considered a garlic because we use them that way. The best way to define the flavor profile of an elephant garlic is it's got the garlic flavor to it without that pungent bite. You know, sometimes some of these garlics can have real, real strong bite to the end of them. The elephant garlic has got the flavor without that bite on it. So it's a little bit more mellower than a regular garlic is. It works really good for cooking.
So yeah, elephant garlic is not a true garlic. It's actually a leek. So if you live in the South like we do, now you can grow elephant garlic anywhere in the country. It does well in the cold weather. But if you specifically live in the South where we do, we can't grow the traditional hard neck and soft neck garlics because it just doesn't get cold enough for the garlic to do what they call stratify.
I've done some extensive trials trying to, because I thought I would love to grow some of these unique garlics, and I failed miserably at it.
So if you live in the South and want to grow garlic, elephant garlic is the way to go. If you live up North, it's also a great crop up there as well.
Store's really good. I mean, store's better than onion does.
Yeah, it does. The elephant garlic, you can also eat the greens off those. Once it starts to flower, you can eat what they call the scapes off those. A lot of people will cut those and saute them. With the elephant garlic, especially with the cloves this big, you're going to plant these a little further apart than you do the shallots. I would say about 8 to 12 inches apart on these. Now with the shallots and the elephant garlic, I'm going to be doing both of those just like I do my onions. I'm going to be doing drip, and then I'm going to do double rows on the drip. We'll talk about in a minute. These things need plenty and plenty of water.
You want your pH on elephant garlic between 6 and 7, somewhere in that range right there.
Slightly acidic.
Yeah.
So we're going to plant these 8 to 12 inches apart, a little further apart. When you plant them, you want to... I'm trying to find an example here. Maybe this one does. So this... They'll have... Some of the cloves will have kind of this crescent shape to it. You want to plant that crescent facing down there.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So you wouldn't plant it straight up like you would a shallot?
You can plant it straight up like that.
See, that's the way I would do it, just like you would a shallot.
But you can also drop them in the ground and put them straight down like that. That's the way I did them last year. Either way, you see where you have a root end and a stem end there.
Root end down, boys and girls.
Okay. And with these, unlike the shallots that I recommend leaving a little sticking out the top of the soil, you want to bury these babies.
Yep.
I'd say, you know, the way I always do it, make me a trench with the wheel hoe, with the plow set, make me about a 3 to 4 inch furrow and put them down in there and cover them up good.
Nobody has told me this, but I'm going to go out on a limb here. The elephant garlic is more cold tolerant than the shallots and the onions and things, because they don't have near the moisture content in the tops than what the onions do.
I'm
just throwing that out there.
Could very well be true.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about when to plant and then watering and fertilizing. So if you look at the Farmer's Almanac, and I know some people go by that as the absolute truth. The Farmer's Almanac will tell you to plant this stuff 2 weeks after your first frost date, which I don't understand that. I don't think that is true at all. You want to get these in the ground and let them have time to establish roots and some leaves before you get some real cold temperatures. They can take some cold, but you got to have that plant kind of established before then. So our rule on any kind of alliums is to plant 2 weeks before your first frost date, or what your average first frost date is.
Example would be zone 4.
Zone four. Or let's talk about us and then we'll back up to zone four.
We'll go with it back.
So our, let's just say our average first frost is the end of November. Mm-hmm. So if we back up 2 weeks from that, our ideal planting date for this stuff right here and the shallots is going to be mid-November.
I think you could get, you got a little bit of lead with there. 1st November to the 15th of November.
Right. Would probably be, and these are not exact dates. You've got a couple weeks on either side of that. You could jump the gun if you wanted to.
Normally the first week in October is when I plant them, somewhere there.
You mean November?
Yeah, I mean November.
Yeah, in November. So a few weeks before you're going to get a frost, your first light frost is when you want to plant these guys. That way, when you do get the hard frost later on, they're nice and established. So let's go through the planting times here. So zone eight, which is where we are, mid-November. We did have some people call the other day, if you're in zone nine, you'd probably be late November, early December. Zone seven, you're looking at early November, late October, early November.
Yep.
Zone six, you'd be early to mid-October is when you want to plant. Zone 5, early October, end of September. And if you're zone 4 right now, mid-September is going to be, mid to the end of September is going to be the perfect time for you. Now, a lot of people have asked me, can I go ahead and get these things and hold them till I plant? How do I store them or whatever? You just put them in a room with AC, they'll be fine. You don't have to put them in the fridge. You guess you could. You might introduce too much moisture that way if you put them in the fridge. I would say just leave them in a breathable, like we send them in, bag. Keep them in the air conditioning in the house. They should be fine till you get ready.
What's nice about the elephant garlic and the shallots is the shallots are daytime neutral. So the same varieties that we plant here in the South, you can plant anywhere. You just change the plant date a little bit. Unlike sweet onions, where you have to grow different varieties according to what area you're in. These elephant garlics and these shallots, you can plant the same varieties. You can plant them anywhere. You just change the plant date a little bit. Now, if you live in zone 4, 5, or 6, after you plant them and they start coming up a little bit and then your cold weather really comes in, you want to mulch them and put some mulch on top of them.
Insulate them
for that winter time. And as soon as spring starts coming and things start popping through, you want to go back there and pull that mulch back and give them room to pop through there. But you're going to need a little insulation on them if you live in these very cold climates. Here in zone 8, we don't have to worry about that. But I would say 4, 5, and 6, I would definitely mulch, whether it be elephant garlic or shallots.
Put some wheat straw down, something like that.
The shallots, you can plant a spring crop also if you live in some of these cold climates.
Yeah.
Now, we don't worry about that here. We did it last year, but it actually works better to plant in the fall and probably zone 7 and 8. But if you're in zone 4, 5, and 6, you can plant you a fall crop. Or if you miss the fall crop, you can plant you a spring crop. If you do the fall crop, you're probably going to harvest 2 to 3 weeks earlier than you would the spring crop, and then you're going to get a little nicer bulb.
That's right. All right, let's talk about the watering and fertilizing requirements for these guys. Generally speaking, your shallots and your elephant garlic, and I would probably say onions too, going to need at least 1 inch of water a week. Now, that's as far as the water requirement scale goes with vegetables. That's on up there with sweet corn. That's a good bit of water. Rarely do we get consistently 1 inch a week of rain.
No, but if you do get 1 inch, it means you get a water that week.
But so what my point is here is you're gonna have to water these babies, and you need a good way to water them. And that's why I like putting them on drip, so I can just turn it on and I can flood them. A lot of times with my onions and elephant garlic, shallots and stuff get up, I'll just go out there right before I go to bed. I'll go out there, turn that drip on, and let it run all night, and I'll turn it off in the morning and they can soak it right up. So at least 1 inch of water a week. The drip tape really helps with that if you can use it. Fertilizing. So this is kind of my fertilizer program that I'll do on all my alliums here. When we're fertilizing anything, we always talk about initially you want to give it a complete fertilizer, because the phosphorus and the potassium are going to help root development. And then once things start growing, you switch it over to just give it mainly nitrogen. That's for the most part, with most vegetables, that's what we do. So what I'll do is initially, once I put these babies in the ground and they root in just a hair, I'm going to inject them with some of this right here. I'm going to do 1.5 pounds per 100 square feet or 100 row feet. So 1.5 pounds per 100 feet initially. And then once they get going.
Well, let's hold up just a minute.
Okay.
So if you're doing raised beds or something like that and you're doing this right here, the easiest thing to do is take your water can, put you a couple ounces of that in a gallon or gallon and a half in a water can, and just water them in. You can use a hose in mixer to inject some of this in. But if you're not using drip, you can still use the 20-20-20, just dissolve it in some water, whether it be the hose-in sprayer, or you could do it with your little pump-up sprayer like I've done before, or
right.
Put it in a water can and just water it.
Yeah, yeah. I like to tell people a couple tablespoons per gallon on this stuff if you're hand mixing it there. If you got an old milk jug or something, that works good. Put you a couple tablespoons in there, fill that water, shake it up, and then you can sprinkle it over
the
area.
If you're close to the house, it mixes a little better with warm or hot water than it does with cool water, but you want to let that cool down some for you. Put it on your plant. You don't want to scorch your plants.
That's right. That's right. So we're going to start off with 1.5 pounds of this per 100 square feet. And then once they get going, during that vegetative phase, so we talk about alliums having the vegetative phase or the investment phase, and then we have the bulbing or the payoff phase. During that vegetative phase where we're trying to get as much leaf growth as we can, I'm going to hit them at least twice with some of this ammonium sulfate here, which is just lots of nitrogen there, and you get that sulfur that they need.
21% nitrogen. Now this also, you could inject.
You could inject, it is water soluble.
Or you could side dress with it.
Most people will side dress, but you could certainly inject with it. And with this, we're gonna do 1 pound per 100 square feet or 100 row feet. So
how often?
I'm gonna do it at least twice during that vegetative phase. So I would say probably once at least every 3 or 4 weeks. I have.
If you get a lot of rain, if you haven't get a lot of rain, you're gonna have to adjust that a little bit and maybe do it a little sooner if it's dry.
Probably I have done it as frequent as once every 2 weeks, but at least once a month.
Yeah.
Put some of this on. So really simple watering and fertilizing program if you just understand what they need. They need that inch of water a week, and they're gonna need that complete to start off with. And they're going to need the supplements. You're going to need to supplement with some nitrogen.
Now, I would put the micro boost. I would work the micro boost in there with my ammonia sulfate sometime in there. That's going to give you a complete package.
All right. So head on over to the website. Under our premium garden seed, you'll see a category for elephant garlic. You'll see a category for shallots. You could pick between those three varieties there. Like I said, 1 pound, 5 pound, and 10 pound quantities on those. We are somewhat limited. They've been selling like hotcakes so far, and when they're gone, they're gone. So you can get them whenever you like and plant them.
And I can promise you, this elephant garlic, we're gonna sell out of it.
Yeah. Let's get into some questions from last week's show. And if we didn't answer any questions about elephant garlic or shallots that you may have, put those in the comments. We'll get to them. If we answer your question on this week's show, send us an email to cusserve@hosstools.com. We'll be glad to send you a nice little prize.
Our first question comes from Walt Lars, and he asks, when a fertilizer says so many pounds per acre, how do you figure how much to put in a row?
All right. Time for a little math lesson.
Ooh-wee.
Here.
Ooh-wee. Got the cards out again.
So we do this frequently where we talk about, you know, we try to convert everything to pounds per 1,000 square feet or pounds per 100 square feet because that works for most people's garden. Well, I'll give you how we get to that calculation. So just set up a little simple ratio. So up here, we know that 1 acre equals 43,560 square feet. We know
correct.
That. Okay. So the way you set this up is just a little ratio here. So on this side of the equal sign, say whatever whatever fertilizer you're looking at, say it recommends, in this case, this example, 80 pounds per acre. So that's 80 pounds per 43,560 square feet. And then on the other side of the equal sign, X pounds, that's what we're wanting to know, how many pounds per 1,000 square feet, okay? And to solve this, it's just simple algebra here. You just cross multiply here, 80 times 1,000, this times X, and then you divide by that. So simple algebra there. And when you do that, you get to this number here of what would be 1.84 pounds per 1,000 square feet. So you just set up that little ratio there. You could do this square feet. You could change this number over here to 100 or 10 or 10,000, whatever you wanted to. But that's how you set it up, man. It's pretty easy to figure out how much you need for your garden.
The mass stays the same.
The mass stays the same. All right. Hope that helps. Second question is from Bryn C, and she says, really enjoyed the, I assume it's a she, apologize if it's not. She says, really enjoyed the video. I garden in raised beds with a small row garden. Would like to make the larger row garden for the spring in an area that's never been gardened. How would you begin the whole process of making this in-ground row garden?
Good time of year to get this question, because now is when you need to start planning for that spring garden. This is what I would do. I'd work that soil up however means I had to do that. I would get it worked up and get that vegetate this growing there, whether it be grass, weeds, whatever, and I'd get it turned in there and get it working out and get it dying where I could get rid of that litter. Then I would come in there and I would soil test, and I would adjust my soil test between 6 and 7.0. And that's pretty much going to carry, you know, that's going to be good for pretty much all the vegetables you're going to grow. So you want to get it to adjust it to get it in that range. Definitely pull a soil sample, know where you're at before you start adjusting and do everything to get it within that range. Then I would plant me a crop of rye cover crop to grow over the wintertime until I got ready to work it in right before I got ready to plant my garden. So there you have it. Simple steps. Work it up now, adjust the pH, plant your cover crops such as rye, and when it comes springtime, you're ready to work it up one more time and to plant.
So take a tiller or harrow, cultivate it, get you, add enough lime if you need to get your pH between 6 and 6.5. Mm-hmm. And then plant.
And the reason I mention rye is because it's not real hard to get rid of. It's one of the easiest ones to incorporate into the soil. And it does some things for nematodes and for disease, and it would be a good starting cover crop for a new garden.
That would certainly work, certainly work. All right, so get your fall gardens ready, get these allium plots ready. It'll be time to plant some onions, some elephant garlic, some shallots real soon. Go check those out on the website. Let us know if you have any questions, and we will see you guys next time.
Take care.